Looking for instant, long-lasting volume and texture? Meet Lip.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Living Proof's Full Dry Volume Blast. Use the code VOLUME at livingproof.com for a free travel-size full dry volume blast with your $20 order. We are the science. You are the living proof. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will deliver seasonal recipes with pre-measured ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for less than $10 each. Get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/modern. That's slash modern. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Admit it, you've had some revenge fantasies. I mean, we all have. Maybe some are more dramatic than others, but I think it's safe to say that most of those fantasies stay squarely rooted in our imaginations. But Christy Clancy's revenge fantasy crossed into reality in her own spin class. Here's actor and singer Kristen Chenoweth reading Christy's essay, Revenge of the Friend.
They kissed. Nobody kisses in spin class. A room full of sweaty people panting atop steel bikes with 30-pound flywheels is no place for romance, and certainly no place for my friend's ex-husband to show up with his girlfriend, the woman he left her for. It was just a few weeks into the new year, and I had a packed class of weekend warriors perched on their saddles, waiting for me to help them fulfill their resolutions to become skinny and fit. My friend's ex was the last person I expected to see. In the 2 years since they had split up, I'd gone out of my way to avoid him. But here he was, looking as ridiculous as most middle-aged men do in tight Lycra shorts. I couldn't have imagined a better scenario to let him have it. I had a microphone strapped around my head and a captive audience. The problem was that I used to like him. I attended his children's baptisms and helped him plan his 40th birthday party. We'd spent countless hours together drinking wine and commiserating about child-rearing, long Wisconsin winters, and interrupted sleep. Oh, he could be charming. And that morning, his familiar charm disarmed me before I could remind myself that I wasn't supposed to like him anymore. My smile was a reflex that he had misinterpreted as a welcome. A small woman with a tight ponytail and toothy smile walked in and stood next to him. He introduced her as his friend. It was hard for me to reconcile this flesh-and-blood woman with a home-wrecking diva I had imagined the past few years. She seemed so harmless and normal. "We decided to give spinning a try," he said. "Can you help set us up?" "We? Us?" Oh, what could I do? I led them to a pair of bikes. Now, I've taught spin for over a decade, so even though their presence had thrown me, I could still mindlessly check their settings and offer instructions. She must have known who I was, because she went out of her way to kill me with kindness. I wanted her to stop chirping so I could wrap my brain around the fact that she was in my class. Then, he called her sweetie, the same thing he used to call his wife, and I snapped back to attention, shut the door, dimmed the lights, and cranked up the music. I got on my bike and I looked out at my class. I usually love teaching on Saturday mornings, but now I was distracted and unsettled, remembering how he had initiated their split. They were drinking coffee on their front porch when he said, "I'm leaving and I don't want to work things out." He was apologetic but firm. It didn't take long for him to confess there was someone else. Don't judge, my husband warned me, but I couldn't help it. If this could happen to them, could it happen to us? Their breakup made everything I considered solid seem vulnerable, like a bone riddled with stress fractures. In the aftermath, my friend couldn't sleep or eat, and she worried constantly about their children and their finances. To make matters worse, a year or so after they split, she was given a diagnosis of cancer. There were other spin classes and other instructors. Why had they come to mine? Did he think this would make things normal again? Was he cruel or clueless? I tried to focus. I followed my planned profile, leading us up some imaginary hills and sprinting past invisible riders. I was just getting my groove back when I looked up and saw him lean toward her. And there it was. The kiss. That's when I decided that if they came back to my class next week, I'd be ready. The following Saturday, I showed up early. My regulars filed in with towels and water bottles, barely awake. And then, sure enough, in they walked, holding hands, wearing big smiles and matching powder blue jerseys. "Good morning," exclaimed Mr. Spin Class Kisser, looking fresh and robust. I led the lovers toward the middle row of the bikes. The easiest bikes have big, comfortable seats and magnetic resistance. The toughest are the pros, with narrow saddles that are hard as concrete. With fixed gears, the pros require the kind of pedal efficiency that only comes with a lot of practice. Most people are too intimidated to attempt them. When the pros first arrived, I found them so difficult to ride that I thought they must be broken. Even after training on them for months, the longest I could stand up out of the saddle without losing control or combusting was about a minute. So naturally, that's what I set him up on. The lights on the bike's computer flickered on, showing watts, KJs, HRs, RPMs, numbers I knew meant nothing to him. He looked confused. "Oh, you'll love this," I said. I put her right next to him on the Sunday Cruiser. A bike so gentle, she may have well have had a straw basket with flowers attached to the handlebars. I turned away and cued the music. I like making themed playlists for my classes. Irish music for St. Patrick's Day, songs about food for Thanksgiving. I've got my playlists for rain, snow, summer, peace, and revolution. For this occasion, I created a new playlist. Music for cheaters. I had spent the week going through my iTunes library and settled on songs like Rihanna's Unfaithful, Jewel's Till It Feels Like Cheating, oh, and some classics. Heard It Through the Grapevine, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, and Tempted. I know spin instructors have a reputation for being sadistic, but I never saw myself that way. I tell people to ride at their own pace and take breaks. That morning, however, I offered no such assurances. 30-second sprint, out of the saddle, I barked. Go, grab it, nail it, whatever it was. Come on, hammer it. Your legs should feel like egg beaters. Boil your quads. I got off my bike and walked around the room, lingering behind the levers to make them feel my presence. I watched sweat drip onto the floor around his bike, so much that I could practically see my reflection in it. I thought of my friend's quivering hands and pained expression when she told me about their breakup. I thought of the hours I'd spent with her in the clinic while the chemo pumped into her arm and the nights I slept in her house when she didn't want to be alone. It didn't seem fair that she had to suffer through so much while her ex seemingly got everything he wanted. I like to think I was doing this for my friend, but this was my own revenge. I hadn't even told her about them showing up at my class. I didn't want to hurt her, and in truth, I'm not sure she would have cared. She and her ex had reached a certain peace I found hard to imagine. I wouldn't go so far as to say they were friends, but they got along well enough. I knew I was acting childish and petty. It wasn't me he had left, but it felt as if he had broken a pact we'd made as couples. After 2 years of biting my tongue, This felt necessary. Cathartic. I got back on my bike and watched as he strained, his face red and hair drenched. Yet, he was managing. I almost couldn't believe it. It was hard for him, but not impossible. I don't think either of them paid any attention to the lyrics I'd so carefully selected. At the end of the class, I turned down the music and led some stretches. Okay. So I hadn't broken him. But I was still feeling pretty pleased with myself. Until he walked up with a towel around his neck and gave me a pat on the back with his large, damp hand. "I gotta tell you," he said, "that was the best workout I've had in a long time." "Oh, it was wonderful," she added. "We loved it." A few weeks later, I met my friend for a glass of wine. Her hair used to be straight, but it had grown back curly, and it looked nice that way. Her cancer had been caught early, and she had a good prognosis. I decided to tell her what I had done, or at least tried to do. As I sheepishly related the story of my clever, if unnoticed, playlist and punishing but welcomed routine, she listened with an expression that seemed to be a mixture of curiosity and horror. When I stopped talking, she didn't say anything at first. I worried that I had hurt her, or that she disapproved. Then I saw a small smile tug at the side of her mouth. "You're a good friend," she said.
Kristen Chenoweth reading this week's Modern Love essay by Christy Clancy. So, remember that cheater playlist Christy spent hours creating for her spin class? We've turned it into a Spotify playlist. Check it out at...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
WBUR.org/modernlove. And speaking of Christy, it's been 5 years since she wrote that essay. We'll check in with her after a short break.
Living Proof delivers bigger hair that lasts. Product tester Jamie explains what Full Dry Volume Blast does for her.
What they tested a lot on my hair was kind of the next day results. So they were looking for how long did this volume really stay? Once you applied it, did it fall flat in a few hours? And it really doesn't. In fact, in my hair, I think it looks better 24 hours after. It just, the hair held amazingly well and it was ready to go. It looked incredible.
Use the code VOLUME at livingproof.com for a free travel-size full-dry volume blast with your $20 order.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And now a postscript from the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times, Daniel Jones, and the author of this week's essay, Christy Clancy.
I knew a lot of people read Modern Love, but I didn't know that so many people would. And of course, Milwaukee is a small town, especially the part of Milwaukee where I lived. And I think people like to read about other people making asses of themselves. You don't want to read about someone who's perfect. But at the same time, when it's you who made an ass of yourself, it's a little different when you just put that out there for millions of people to see.
I get a lot of essays that are about revenge fantasies. This was really a different angle. This is more like an observer revenge fantasy. I loved how it may be a serious subject, but this essay made me laugh, and it made readers laugh, and it seemed ultimately kind of harmless. I sort of worried, like, you know, oh my God, what if you do this to him and he has a heart attack? And how are you going to feel then? But he seemed to keep up on the really challenging bike just fine, loved the class. And in the end, everybody seemed happy.
When word of the essay hit the street, Christy was excited, but also concerned. She was afraid she had pushed into dangerous territory, exposing too much personal information about her friend. But she did get her friend's permission before the essay was published and worked hard to make the couple as anonymous as possible. Turns out, though, she didn't need to worry.
Everybody had a theory on who I was writing about, and then it made me think that there was so much going on in my spin class that I had no idea. There was a lot of speculation about different couples and different people that were in the room. And one day I walked outside of the classroom and I ran into one of the people who spins with me all the time. And she said, "Thank you so much for writing about my husband." And I didn't even know her husband was in my spin class, you know, and I thought that was really funny that she thought that whole essay was about her and that I wouldn't have said anything to her about it. I think a lot of women felt like it was good that they knew someone was out there who would have their back. And so I got all these emails from people and they'd say, "Can I send my ex-husband to your class?" So I could play music and torture them.
So did Christy ever hear from Mr. Spin Class Kisser himself?
So the first thing that happened was I got a text from him one day that said, "We will not be in your spin class on Saturday." And my stomach just dropped. And I did feel badly that he was upset about it. I guess looking back, I'm surprised at how upset I was when I found out that they were splitting up. But it's an emotional thing to find out your friends are not going to be part of the unit that you're used to them being. You know, we would always do stuff together, and I guess I thought we'd raise our kids and all grow old together, and it would, you know, there would be some sort of constant relationship there. I know I sound like I'm really angry and I'm seeking revenge, but I think deep down I was just sad.
Well, you get the sense that this is really a catharsis for Christy. You know, sometimes friends suffer as much as or more than the people going through the divorce. And if there's a relationship that breaks up that felt a lot like your relationship, suddenly you just feel like you're on weak ground yourself. Even if nothing's changed, you just think, you know, if it happened to them, it can happen to us, almost like a communicable disease that's spreading.
Now, all these years later, everything's worked out pretty well. She's healthy. I think he's happy. I have, I'd say, pretty decent relationships with both of them now. And I guess you just want your friends to be happy when it comes down to it.
Christy lives in
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Madison, Wisconsin, and is a professor of English at Beloit College. She still teaches spin, but says her classes are now off limits for writing material. No more exposés. But she does continue to write and has finished two novels. She's now working on a book of short stories, and she gave us a preview of one story.
So this woman's husband has left her for another woman, and he picks up the kids to take them for the weekend. And just before he arrives, she discovers that her kids have lice. Like, it's all over their heads. And instead of keeping them in her house, she decides to send these two lice bombs into his life so that his girlfriend will get lice, too. And I actually probably wrote it about the same time as I wrote the Modern Love essay.
That was Christy Clancy, author of Revenge of the Friend. You also heard from Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. The essay was read by Kristen Chenoweth, and we'll hear more from Kristen in a minute.
Not all ingredients are created equal. Blue Apron sources fresh, high-quality ingredients and sends them right to your home in pre-measured packages. You get easy-to-follow recipes, so you can have a meal ready in 40 minutes or less. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free, with free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/modern. New recipes are created each week. That's blueapron.com/modern. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
As you may know, Modern Love, the podcast, is a joint production of WBUR, Boston's NPR station, and the New York Times. Our colleagues at the Times have launched a new culture podcast called Still Processing. And in a few minutes, I'll chat with the co-hosts to give you a taste of what's to come. But remember how I said we'd hear more from Kristen Chenoweth?
He's a fool, and don't I know it, but a fool can have his charms. I'm in love, and don't I show it, like a babe in arms.
This is Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered from Kristen Chenoweth's new album, The Art of Elegance. It's her first album of American standards and will be released on September 23rd. And while she was in front of our mic, we had to ask Kristen why she chose to read this week's essay.
We all have moments where we dream that we get our revenge. And we all have probably peppered in a little revenge throughout our life. And sometimes it feels good in the moment. At the end of the day, though, I notice that when I see even someone else getting their revenge, it doesn't always make me feel as good as I think. It is nice to know, though, that when two women have each other's backs, they've got each other's backs. And at the very end of this piece, you know, the horror that her friend has when she hears what she's done then turns into a smile. I don't know. For me, it just kind of made me think that's true love right there.
Thanks again to Kristen Chenoweth, and thanks to Concord Music for allowing us to play a bit of her album for you. Kristen's busy these days. On November 2nd, she returns to Broadway for a limited run of My Love Letter to Broadway, her solo show featuring musical theater favorites and songs from The Art of Elegance. There's more information at our website, wbur.org/modernlove. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Our casting consultant is Amy Lippins, CSA. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Stay with me, though. There's more in just a second. Our colleagues at The New York Times have a new podcast. It's called Still Processing, and it's hosted by Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham. And they're actually joining us now. Hi, Wesley and Jenna.
Hi.
Okay, so this is really exciting. Still processing. Explain the name. What does it mean?
The way we've been approaching it is sort of looking at all the things that we're still, you know, mulling over and the things that we're still chewing on and the things that we're still texting about and the links that we're sending back and forth. And we're kind of bringing that to the podcast.
We're going
to
sit in the studio and talk about stuff. We're going to go out in the world and talk about stuff. But yeah, I mean, we're going to just talk about life and popular culture.
And things that are relevant and things that we're obsessed with, things that the world's obsessed with.
Things the world should be obsessed with. Things the world should not be obsessed with.
Well, let me ask a sort of more journalistic question here, because Wesley, you're the critic at large at The Times. And Jenna, you're a staff writer for Times Magazine, and you write a lot about tech in our lives. So really, what brought the two of you together? Where's the intersection here?
Well, we talk to each other. Anyway, we just figured it would be smart to just put a microphone between us and talk that way.
And we approach pop culture and the world from very different angles, and we both have our own, you know, unique perspectives that we bring to it. And so I feel like our podcast is sort of that intersection of those two things.
That's for sure. And actually, I mean, I think that is one of the things that I like about talking to Jenna about everything, which is that I don't know what she's going to say.
Likewise.
And I think our differences will make the show interesting and make the show fun.
Well, what's coming up on the show that we should be super excited about?
Ooh.
We're going to talk about the ethics and morality of certain kinds of sharing economy technologies and sharing economy experiences.
Mm-hmm. Start riffing on the news that Airbnb is going to try to change its policies to reduce discrimination within the service and talk about if that's even possible. And then also, you know, TV and movies and we're both listening to the new MIA album right now and trying to figure out what we think about it.
Well, Still Processing is a weekly show from the New York Times. It's hosted by culture writers Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham. New episodes are released on Thursdays, a great day for podcast releases, if I might say. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you like to listen. And Wesley and Jenna, the podcast sounds great. It was wonderful to talk with you. Thanks, both of you, so much.
Thanks, Magna.
Thank you.